Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you be with us. It's July 18th. We say that at the top of each program because many of you are downloading and listening to this, and we want to make sure we get that established at the beginning. This is the July 18th program. Welcome. Good to have you be with us. And we thank you so much for passing the word around. More and more are listening in and making this their weekly routine to get the news and all that's going on in the mortgage industry, and we certainly do. We have a big program today. Talking about a big event that is on Thursday, the 21st of July, that infamous day where CF, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, goes live. And so we're going to be having as our special guest Glenn Corso. He's no stranger to the radio program, to our show, and we'll have Glenn back talking about the impact and what does this mean as we look to the future of the mortgage industry. So it's going to be good to have Glenn on, but we're going to be there. Alice is not with us this week. She is out and has an important session that she just could not make, and it's going on simultaneously, so Alice won't be with us, but we're going to cover some of that topic, those topics. But we got a great program. You'll want to stay tuned all the way through as we get into talking about, again, the future of mortgage banking and what does a specific does the CFPB have proposed for us moving forward. But without further ado, let's get into talking about interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with us again on the program.
What's going on?
Gold prices are shooting up. That's one thing that's going on. Markets are heading down. What's going on?
Gold price is about the only thing up other than rates today. MBS prices are down. Stock market's down. It's a sign of the uncertainties in the market. Much like last week and much like this week, just a very uncertain time given the issues with the debt ceiling or the debt limit discussions and what's going on in Europe. So gold is up over $1,600 an ounce.
Wow, that's amazing.
Really is. Today, MBS prices are down 4.30
seconds. MBS prices are down, okay. 4.30
seconds,
okay.
And stock market's down about 150. So not a great day in either market.
Well, let's talk about last week. What's good? It was good for mortgages overall, was it not?
Yeah, good for mortgages last week. And a lot of it was just that sentiment that goes along with when things are uncertain. People kind of select investments that are less risky than otherwise. And that happens to be U.S. government guaranteed mortgage-backed securities and treasuries. 10 years below 3%, which is always a sign of or lately has been a sign of fear of the uncertainties. And so we're seeing a little, I saw a little benefit in rates last week and stock market didn't do so well.
Yeah, and the debt, the lack of progress in the debt limit discussions is continuing. So any update on any of the latest news items? I haven't looked at the news again this morning, but any news on the U.S. debt limit discussion?
Well, I think that's part of what's hurting the stock market this morning is there's been no real great progress, and what I'm hearing is that the most likely outcome or there won't be a default, which I think everyone's in agreement with, but the compromise is going to be pretty weak. It's going to wind up being an increase in the debt limit with a very small commitment toward cost cutting. So.
Well, are we looking like Italy?
Well, no one wants to say or Greece or any of the other countries who are all establishing that they cannot afford to pay for the promises they've made, and over there they call it austerity measures. Here we just call it deficit reduction, and to me it sounds like all the same thing. You can't afford to pay for the promises you've made. You got to pull back on those promises.
Which is downgraded.
Or get
their,
more money.
Their debt. Yeah.
Well, then also last week, the Fed meeting minutes came out, and the market read those as being a little bit more friendly toward another QE3. And as a result, Bernanke, who was providing testimony before the House Financial Services Committee during Wednesday and Thursday, had to kind of clarify things to say, it's on there just because we want to keep all options open. But he also said, you know, for us to implement QE3 is going to require, you know, a significant deterioration in the current pace of economic growth. So what seemed like a good thing for the markets on Tuesday, he kind of dashed the hopes and turned it around on Moore's Thursday testimony.
Well, one and two didn't work, so maybe the third time's a charm. How about that, Joe?
Let's see. I don't know.
QE3. QE1 and 2 didn't work, so the QE3
works. Do it again.
Third time charm.
Do it again. Yeah. Nice to hear last week inflation's still tame, although it is rising a little bit. Inflation's still tame. Core PPI is a little higher than people expected, but core CPI is still below 2. Retail sales weren't very good. They were basically flat with the prior month, and consumer sentiment fell. So, again, all that uncertainty is just it's amazing how things turned on the July 8th jobs report. Going into that, everything was good. Everything was, the economy's growing. We're getting out of this thing, and then the jobs report came out, and the whole sentiment turned around.
Amazing.
And this week, Dave, couple of housing things coming out, but nothing really. The focus is going to be on the discussions in Congress about the debt limit and on the ongoing saga of the European debt crisis.
Well, we have not, uncertainty continues to rule and reign, which is probably going to be favorable for the mortgage industry. But again, when that turns and we start seeing some favorable economic information, it's to be anticipated that we're going to have immediate, fast reaction. So they got to have your service, Joe. It's got to stay tuned into what's going on, because we're at the all-time lows, and we certainly know they're not going to stay here. And so appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for bringing us another update on all of that. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. Again, we have Glenn Corso as our special guest, talking about the consequences or the results of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau going live on Thursday of this week. What does that mean for our industry? Great discussion ahead. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back. Al Salvi, as I said, who normally covers the traffic report and all the stuff that's moving down the legislative highway, is out of the office. She's in the midst of a training session, and we wish her a great week. She's not here with us, but she gave me some notes. She basically said that there's hasn't been a lot of change since last week's report. So if you want to go back and listen to last week's report, she kind of gave a good in-depth report, good stuff there. And we are excited to have her back here next week giving us an update on all that's going on. One of the things she pointed out, and we're certainly seeing that, is there are a lot of legal cases surfacing with claims of being unfair and deceptive lending practices. Fascinating. And what we're seeing is a number of attorneys out there trying to stir the pot, if they will, with some advertising to consumers. And we're certainly seeing a lot of these people trying to start legal cases, and it appears that with Alice's report here that they're having some success. Also, I think it was a real interesting report. What I saw in the origination news this morning was, if you haven't seen that, take a look at the article. It says, FDIC going after loan brokers? And it's an article that I sent around to the other hosts. It's just really fascinating that former FDIC Chief Sheila Bair has never been a fan of loan brokers, and she has decided to make it a mission to go after those that did corrupt loans, bad loans. And, again, it's not real well defined, but and they're going back, and you can go read the article, but up to 4 years going after loan brokers that, you know, they feel perpetrated or put together bad loans or fraudulent loans. Well, again, the definition, having a chance to read the article, it just happened just before we went out on the went live on the air. But I think that's really fascinating. It's just a climate. We know for a fact that we are in a litigious world more so than ever because of what's going on, the vagueness of the rules and the laws that are out there. Also, there's a second quarter call reports are due now. That's one of our profit doctor's favorite topics. I'm sure you'll touch on that. But the second quarter call reports are due now. And they it will be for the first time that they'll have to reconcile with the previous quarter reporting. So we have turned out and found out that reconciliation of financial data, any numbers, it seems to be an increasing challenge for a number of mortgage banking companies out there. So for those of you that are listening to it, the call report is, a second call report is due. And we have some issues that might be surfacing for some of you as you try to reconcile the first quarter report that you filed and now the second quarter report. So just be aware of that. Interesting stuff that's going on. Again, we wish Alice the best wherever she's at. For those of you that are – I'm already getting some pings from my Facebook page saying, what are you talking about when it comes to lawsuits? Yes, there are law firms that are specifically out there fishing for – people to join lawsuits. And basically what that is a letter being sent out saying that your company is being sued. Again, it's false because the companies that are they're claiming that are under suit or where a class action has been filed, they're not. And they have not filed lawsuits. They are doing it's bad advertising, false letters, and they're sending them out to get consumers to call them about their loan to see if they can't find something wrong so they can start a class action lawsuit. Folks, it's an ugly report. It's just reality we're living in. It's a sign of the times. Hang in there, get a good attorney. We're going to have Glenn Corso on, who is an attorney. He used to be chief counsel for the MBA, and we're going to be having him on here shortly. Folks, it's good to bring this update to you. I wish Alice was doing it. She always does such a much better job, but stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back. And we are going to get the chance to talk to the Profit Doctor and get a health check of what's going on out there. Andy Schell, good to have you back on the program. Also known as the Profit Doctor, fixing what's ailing the bottom line of many a company out there. Good to have you back. So what about this call report coming up and due here? I know you got a lot of things to talk about, but that's just an interesting thing.
Yeah, it is. It's important that people people do it right the first time because people are going to be watching, and people like the CFPB are going to be paying more and more attention, and we've got to do it right the first time. And it's a brave new world in many respects. It's a world that we who have come out of regulatory environments are used to because we're used to always being watched. And mortgage bankers now are just going to have to accept the fact that we're going to be watched, and part of the group that's going to be watching us is the CFPB. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about just a minute ago with Joe – oh, and by the way, Dave, great job.
Yes.
On the traffic report. No accidents. All the lights turn green just like they're supposed to.
Oh, thank you.
But earlier, Joe was talking about that we can't pay for our promises. You know, we've got the CFPB,
yeah,
which is the Consumer Financial Protection Board, and now we have the CPFP, which is the Can't Pay for Promise. And people can't pay for their promises because why?
Can't pay for their promises.
Yeah, CPFP. They can't pay for their promises because they overreached. They said they were going to be able to have money that they don't. They promised money that they don't have, and they got themselves into a mess because they committed to something that there was no way in the world they were ever going to do. And this is what happened to the U.S. auto workers. It happened to the steel company. I mean, people overcommit just to get to the next step, and because we have quarterly EPS reports that go out, nobody looks long-term, which is one of the really cool things about Japan. They have a longer horizon. Because we only look quarterly, all we care about is make the earnings per share for this quarter. We don't think about the long term. And we have stuff blowing up on us. And the bottom line of that is planning and forecasting. You know, in order to be able to keep your promise, in order to avoid, I can't pay for the promises I've made, I can't pay for my promise, you've got to plan. You've got to be able to anticipate what's going to happen next. And, you know, last week we talked about the top 10 elements of a billion-dollar lender. And we're going to talk more about that over the next several weeks, because I think there's a lot of elements in that are really interesting for people to hear about. But, you know, Dave, one of the really key points is the ability to plan and anticipate changes in their business. Planning and forecasting, it can be really fun. It can be really exciting. And what's interesting about it is that what looks like predicting the future is really just having a plan to address contingencies. And planning for contingencies is the difference between a successful business and one that's not successful. You know, as we went through the crash, a lot of the companies that are still surviving today are those that planned for the changes. They planned. I mean, no one anticipated that it would get as bad as it got. But those that keep their finger on the pulse, have a plan for the change, know what to do financially when things change, are the ones that are still there today. And those that are starting today are going to need to do it right the first time. And so for mortgage companies to be able to plan, it really starts with having a basic financial forecast. And the basic financial forecast, all it does is we're going to anticipate revenue and expense for each operating area. I mean, that's really all there is to it, is you start. We look at revenue and what calculates revenue, and, you know, it's driven by the various products. And we look at how much are we going to make on various volume levels by product, and look at all the elements of revenue. Our fees and our interim interest and our gain on sale, and that interim interest, remember interim interest. We're going to come back to that in a minute when we talk about just a little bit about the call report, the standard call report that's not due yet, but we're going to talk about interim interest because that's a really important point. So we're going to forecast. We want to be able to keep our promises. We want to be honorable and do what we say. So we also have to look at expenses. So we're going to look at all the expenses, and we're going to calculate, you know, expense for every element of the business, whether if it's volume driven or units driven, like commission is volume driven. Staff cost often is based on salaries, and then there's certain expenses that are unit driven, like DU, LP polls, that kind of thing. So staffing costs should be expected to be incurred based on certain capacity levels, like how many loans can a processor process and how many loans can a shipper ship.
Yep.
We have ideas about that. We do this all the time, Dave. We work with people that have good financial tools in their company. And so we know, because we're asking them, and because we work with hundreds and hundreds of lenders all across the country, we know how many processes a processor should process given certain technologies, certain channels, and certain data flows. And we know how many loans a shipper should ship. It's like those, how much wood can a woodchuck chuck?
Every time you say that, that's exactly where I go.
Yeah, how many files can a good shipper ship? Well, you need to know that stuff. This is just the basics of running a business, and it's essential to have this kind of capacity metric in your company for every position, not just processors, originators, shippers, closers. It's accounting, it's secondary, it's lock desk, it's everybody. Need to have metrics for the position, and based on that, we can then anticipate, based on volume changes, how many people we're going to need to drive the core of the operations based on the volume increases and all the revenue we're going to get based on the additional volume, including gain on sale. So really creating an accurate forecast calculates the profit for the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 24 months. We've got a model that we run that we use to take to Wall Street to help raise money that goes out for 60 months. But it's you know, we start with 6 months and then 12 months and then go out to 60 months. So, but you got to have a forecast. You got to know what you're going to do. And by doing this, by having a forecast, we can also calculate our cash flows. We can make some assumptions about the pace at which investors are going to be buying our loans. And we can make some assumptions about all the elements that drive cash. And then we can do a cash flow forecast because, you know, cash is king. Managing cash is an essential part of any successful company. We worked with companies that added a bunch of branches, grew too fast, got loans tied up in their warehouse, investors purchasing slowed down, they didn't have the money to make payroll. In the midst of the excitement of adding a bunch of branches, they drove right into the wall or drove right off the cliff. Pick your analogy. Drove right through the intersection, hit another car from your traffic report earlier here, Dave.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, so you got to have this stuff. You can't operate a business without it. If right now today you don't have a financial forecast, you're on the path to nowhere. You'll get to where you're going to get and look back.
Circle that. Yeah, it's absolutely
yeah, you
look
back and say, oh, look
where
I've got. You have to plan, and you got to be able to address contingencies. So
is that where the saying comes in, a failure to plan is a plan to fail?
Exactly. And if you shoot at nothing, you'll hit it every time. If you don't plan, you'll plan to fail. So exactly. So you got to plan. You got to anticipate what's going to happen. So you run a forecast and you say, if our volume goes up this much and our investors slow down this much, what's our cash position? If we add all these branches and our margin is X, what does that do to our bottom line? And what does it do to our cash flow? Oh, and by the way, what about our debt covenants? All this stuff is easy to be done. I mean, we've got a model that we use over and over and over that deals with all this stuff. You just got to have a good plan in place. So, and you got to have a structured approach to do this. And so you get a good plan, you monitor it every month, you update your budget to actuals, you see what you thought was going to happen, if it really happened, you make changes because the market's dynamic. We're going to anticipate changes and make adjustments to the variables every month as time goes on. And I guarantee you, billion-dollar companies do this. Every Fortune 500 company in the country does this. This is the core of what successful companies do
exactly
to
right.
be successful. You have to do it. It's just not random. These kind of changes shouldn't – success is not random. Success is driven by doing the right things at the right time and having the right people that are serving customers well and making money. So don't be random. Don't let the market surprise you. Anticipate the variables and predict outcomes and have a plan to address the dynamics of the market. And this is what a successful company does. So one last quick point on the call report, then I'll wrap up. Now, although I am a little bit ahead of time. So here's a side note about the call report. Okay, so we have done the extended call report already once. The next extended call report is, if a financial condition section of the call report is coming up, the activity report that everybody has to do is coming up again now. The people who do not file the MBFRF have not filed the standard financial condition report yet. And there are some elements about interest, interim interest being the most significant. Interim interest has to be reported on the financial condition call report, and lots of detail about payroll has to be reported on the standard financial condition call report. The standard financial condition call report has never been submitted yet by anybody. It only the activity report has been submitted thus far. Now, the extended report that the MBFRF filers have to file have already done it. So if you know what MBFRF is, then you're all set. Don't worry about it. If you don't know what MBFRF is, then you probably haven't done it. You haven't done the financial condition call report yet, the standard financial condition call report, and it's coming up, and it's going to be huge. I talked to CPAs all around the country, most of whom audit mortgage companies, and they're all very worried about this because we're going to get to the end, and people are not going to have the information they need because they didn't do their payroll reporting, they didn't do their interim interest reporting, or worse yet, they guessed, which we ran into a company a couple weeks ago, that's what they did. They just guessed. Tell you what, when the CFPB comes and starts looking at stuff, we better have this stuff right.
Better get it right.
Do it right correctly. So it's a huge issue. So if you're not aware of how to get it fixed, give us a call. We'll give you a free assessment to make sure you are safe, because this is a growing problem, and we don't want for companies to lose their state licensing, which is what can happen if this isn't fixed. Let us help. Let's not get to the end and have it blow up. Deal with it now. And that's the Profit Doctor,
right.
Dave.
Good. Appreciate
a little bit
Profit
stuffy,
Doctor.
But doing okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, a failure to plan is a plan to fail, as that expression goes, and you drive that point home. But I tell you, who's going to be driving it home really clearly? The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Elizabeth Warren's going to be doing that, running it temporarily for a little while. We're going to hear all about that, get an update from Glenn Corso, who's going to be our guest in just a minute. He is the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. A lot of great information coming out. You're going to want to stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken. It is July 18th. We say that again just for those of you who are downloading going, which program is this again? So we allow you to have that data at the head of this segment. We have a special guest again. Again, no stranger to the radio program that we broadcast each and every week to the industry. His name is Glenn Corso. He's the managing director. He's also the co-founder along with Pete Mills. Glenn Corso and Pete Mills started a project called the Community Mortgage Banking Project that has taken off and has done extremely well. Community Mortgage Banking Project is an advocacy organization representing independent community and regional-based mortgage banking companies. Glenn was the former senior vice president at the PMI Group. He has over 33 years of experience in the mortgage banking industry. Great background, good friend, and someone that we love to have on the program. Glenn, welcome to Licken on Lending, the radio program. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks very much.
Last week we're running a series on the future of mortgage banking, where is this industry going, and probably one of the greatest determining factors of a bit of our future is going to be found in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We just cracked the lid on that topic last week, and we left our listeners hanging with one question. Does it have funding? So let's start there, Glenn, with does CFPB have funding?
Well, that is a great question to start with, and here's why. In the law which created the CFPB, the Dodd-Frank Act, provided that the Federal Reserve every year would basically send to the CFPB $500 million a year to run the agency. You know, in terms of pure legal structure, the CFPB is part of the Federal Reserve. Now, that's kind of a fiction because on paper it's part of the Federal Reserve, but the Federal Reserve Board of Governors has no control over the CFPB. The CFPB is headed up by a director that's appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. So even though it's a little bit like having a house guest that has their own entrance so they can come and go for
their own fee.
And you have to feed them and house them, you know, because they're a guest.
Wow.
That's essentially what the CFPB is to the Fed. So they do have funding. But I heard today we were talking to the lobbyists that work for us on Capitol Hill, and the lobbyists were telling us that there's a report circulating saying that until a director is actually confirmed by the Senate, that the CFPB cannot request any money from the Fed, and the Fed cannot give them any money until there's a director. Now, I don't know if that is correct, but that's a report that's circulating. But the law says that the CFPB is entitled to $500 million a year from the Federal Reserve. And, of course, the Federal Reserve is a self-funding entity. That is from the fees that they impose on banks, the money they make in the market, et cetera, et cetera. They don't get any public money, any appropriated money.
At least not over the top of the table. It seems
correct.
Like they're collecting in other ways. Okay, let's get into the discussion. So they come into existence. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make implications there. But anyway, it's just curious. That's always the big topic
the feds, how that operates, how it's funded, a whole program that could be on that. But they do come – the fact is they do come into existence, at least officially. Is that the best fair way to say it? July 21st, this Thursday.
You are exactly right. They come into existence officially. The law provided that the Secretary of the Treasury had the ability to designate that date, and Secretary Geithner did that last fall, and he designated it on the one-year anniversary of the signing of the Dodd-Frank Act, which is the 21st. So they'll come into existence. They won't have a director. The Treasury Secretary will serve not as an interim director, but sort of fulfill the legal capacity of the director. But in reality, the person who's running the Bureau right now and will continue to run it until somebody's approved, I believe, is Elizabeth Warren.
All right. So, and there's rumors out there that Obama is going to announce somebody today. Is that correct?
That is exactly right. The report over the weekend, which has been confirmed, is that he is going to nominate the former Attorney General of the state of Ohio, Richard Cordray. And Cordray is already at the Bureau. He is an associate director of supervision and enforcement. And for a variety of reasons, the president made the determination that Elizabeth Warren wouldn't be confirmed by the Senate or couldn't be confirmed by the Senate. So he's decided to nominate Cordray, and the official announcement's expected today.
Hey, Dennis, right, Joe, is he obviously President Obama thinks he's more likely to be confirmed. What are your thoughts? And there have been talks about by the Republicans anyway, demanding a change in the structure at the top of the Bureau.
Yeah, Joe, you're exactly right. The Republicans there's 44 Republican senators. They have, as a group, said that they will not confirm any person that President Obama nominates unless three changes are made. They want the structure of the Bureau to be changed to a five-person commission instead of having a single director. They want the money to operate the Bureau to come from congressional appropriations rather than this deal with the Fed that I described. And then the third thing is, and this is a concern that the Republicans have been pretty consistent in voicing, which is that the CFPB has authority over a broad range of consumer laws, and they have the authority to enforce those laws on two groups: the big banks, i.e. banks that have $10 billion or more in assets, and non-bank lenders, including mortgage bankers, payday lenders, all sorts of lenders like that who are not banks. And the Republicans have been very concerned that by giving the CFPB that kind of authority over the larger banks, that the CFPB could place too much of an emphasis on enforcement of consumer laws without having to take into account the safety and soundness of the big banks that they're regulating, and hence they could jeopardize the financial soundness of those big banks and maybe drive some of them into insolvency. And so they want some kind of check on that authority of the CFPB.
What's,
and Glenn,
really
interesting?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to ask you how you handicap that the likelihood of that happening.
Well, you know, right now, I'd say the likelihood of that happening is pretty small. What I think may happen is that the president, under the Constitution, has the ability to make an appointment when Congress is in a recess. They'll be going into a recess in August, and I wouldn't be surprised if the president exercises his authority to make a recess appointment. Those only run for 1 year. So that would mean come next August that the appointment would expire. But here's the interesting twist. Under the Dodd-Frank Act, the president nominates and the director has to be confirmed by the Senate. only the director has the authority to appoint a deputy director. So what could happen is Obama makes a recess appointment, come next August, the Senate refuses to act on confirming that person permanently. And that would mean, in the interim, assuming they've appointed a deputy director, that the deputy director then becomes the acting head of the Bureau until somebody is nominated and approved by the Senate.
And that would be Elizabeth Warren.
Well, it could be Elizabeth Warren, or it could be somebody else. You know, the latest rumors are that Elizabeth Warren is going to run for the Senate against Scott Brown.
Mm.
But who knows if that's true or not.
Yeah. She is not popular when it comes to the Republicans confirming her having anything to do with this and this authority. By the way, folks, if you haven't gone out to Lenders Compliance Group, read their newsletter dated July 13th, there is a list of 18 separate regulations that the CFPB has authority over. It is an astounding long list. Too long to read for the radio program. We got so much other things we want to talk about. But I encourage you to go out and take a look at that newsletter. Read it. It's well written. Jonathan Fox wrote the letter and his newsletter. It's just loaded with some great information and some great humor. I always like when someone can write and put in there. One of his quotes is in there is from the Beatles song, "You say yes, I say no. You say stop, I say go, go, go." So, I mean, there's some great things. It's humorously written. It's a lot of stuff there, great stuff. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back. This is David Lick with Lickin' on Lending. We have our special guest, Glenn Corso, who is the managing director, co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. I encourage you to go out to their website, www.CommunityMortgageBankingProject.com. I encourage you to go there. Is it .org, Glenn, or .com?
It's .org. And actually, Dave, my bad, I forgot to give you the new web address, which is www.CommunityMB.org.
All right. Good. CommunityMB. A little bit shorter to type. Easy to remember. And I encourage people to go out and listen. We have a number of our clients that have joined Glenn's group and are part of it. It's you know what? We appreciate all that the MBA does, but there has been concerns that do they represent the smaller guys? Glenn and his group is doing an outstanding job of doing that, and I think working well with the MBA, trying to coordinate that. We all need to pull on the oars together. You're doing a great job, Glenn. It's so good to have you on the radio program. We're continuing to talk about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the implications of that. Let's get into one of the things that is I found interesting is that CFPB is taking over HUD's rule of the SAFE Act. What other regulations are they taking on that are going to have a direct impact on the mortgage industry, Glenn?
So I'll name the big ones: Truth in Lending, RESPA, Equal Credit Opportunity, ECOA, HOPA, and HMDA. Those are the big ones, and of course, as you mentioned, they're taking over HUD's role in the SAFE Act. The other key thing, and this is really important for everybody to know, is that the CFPB is given very broad authority to license and regulate all non-bank lenders in the U.S., which includes independent mortgage banking companies, i.e. those that are not affiliated with a bank. And there is no clear-cut delineation in the Dodd-Frank bill as to where the CFPB's authority to regulate mortgage independent mortgage banks ends and the state authority begins. So, you know,
that is an interesting dynamic.
Right.
That could be a conundrum for, you know, who's on first. It's that Abbott Costello's famous line, who's on first? Who's regulating these guys? State or CFPB?
Right. You're exactly right. As a matter of fact, you know, we with the mortgage banks that are in our group, we are finally starting to get reports that the states are starting to coordinate a bit better. They're having multi-state exams. They're talking to each other. And so you don't have a situation where, you know, the state of Massachusetts is in today, Arizona is in the day after tomorrow, and then, you know, California is in 3 days later. They're starting to work together better. Now, all of a sudden, you have this new federal regulator with a broad mandate, plenty of money, and the ability to do what they please.
So what I thought where you were going with that is the fact that they're starting to work together is because of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. What I'm saying is they've started to do that on their own well, but now we have the new big overseer that, again, we don't know really who's in authority, the states or the CFPB, and you're saying that that could interrupt that collaborative effort? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, it could. It doesn't look – I mean, the states are kind of marching ahead. And
yeah.
They don't look like they're allowing the CFPB, the fact that it's starting on the 21st or any of that, to interfere in any way with what they want to get done. The other thing which is interesting is that all the legal authority we've consulted all agree on the idea that until a director is nominated and approved by the Senate, that the CFPB doesn't have the authority to really start regulating non-bank lenders because that's all new activity, new regulations that they have to issue. They can enforce the existing laws, so they can enforce Truth in Lending, they can enforce RESPA. Those are existing laws. There's existing regulations there that they can do without a permanent director, but they can't start new things. And so they can regulate the banks under the Consumer Protection Authority they have, but they can't start their supervision and examination of non-bank lenders without having a permanent director in place.
Joe, let's get back to you. You have
a lot of
your listeners are originators out there. Let's really get to some of the heart of the questions that they might have that Glenn can answer.
Well, everyone's got to be concerned about the definitions of QM and QRM, and I know, it's my understanding, isn't the deadline for comments on QM about to come up?
Yes, Joe. As a matter of fact, it's this coming Friday, July 22nd.
Yeah. And so where do we stand on that at this point, Glenn? And the deadline for QRM has been extended to August 1st. So, you know, those two rules are going to redefine our industry, and just wanted to get your sense of any update, or has it been, you know, kind of quiet during this comment period?
Well, here's what's going on there. First, when the Federal Reserve Board issued the ability to pay qualified mortgage QM proposed regulation, they designed it so that the comment period would end one day after the new bureau comes into existence. And under the law, the authority since ability to pay QM is under Truth in Lending. Truth in Lending, of course, goes to the Bureau come July 21. So these proposed regulations were proposed by the Fed, which had authority over Truth in Lending, but now they'll be finished. So a final regulation will be issued by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau whenever they choose to do that. Presumably, they'll absorb all the comments, read them through, and then sometime late this year, early next year, whenever it is, they'll issue a final regulation. As far as QRM goes, the Bureau doesn't have any specific or direct role in QRM. The six agencies that are charged with the joint QRM responsibility all retain that responsibility even after the Bureau comes into effect. But the the law for QRM says it can't be any broader than QM. So indirectly, however the CFPB defines QM in the end, will set the sort of the outer limits for what QRM could be.
And then the NBA has fought hard against, and many of the other consumer agencies as well as the industry against the loan to value limit at being at what 80%, and the debt to income ratios being fixed. Is there when you say that QRM cannot be broader, that would make it sound more narrowly defined and therefore okay?
Well, I think certainly there's been a very big effort on the LTV limits, and we think that the momentum is really headed in our direction, so that we're very hopeful that if we don't get LTV out of the final QRM rule altogether, that we should get a much more workable LTV limit of 95%, probably with mortgage insurance or other credit enhancement required. At least that's the outlook right now. We've had 300 members of Congress and nearly 50 senators sign a letter saying that the 80% LTV limit is just unworkable and way too restrictive. So we're cautiously optimistic there. And we've also been making the argument, and I think everybody in the lending industry has joined this argument, to say that even though QRM can't be any broader than the QM, doesn't mean it has to be very, very much narrower. You know, the language is pretty specific. It says cannot be broader than. And so to my mind, I think you can read that to say, well, it means it shouldn't be broader than, but it doesn't have to be a lot narrower.
That's good. Well, let's talk about, we've got, I want to make sure we cover all the issues, and I've got a question outside of CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, I want to get to, just kind of a global spin. So start thinking about globally what else we should be focusing on as an industry as possible threats, the SWOT analysis. So I'd love to get a quick SWOT run through that towards the as the last question coming at you. But let's go back to the possibility or where this stands with Cordray. Is it Cordray? Is that how you say
it? Cordray, right, yes.
Cordray is how the probability of getting him confirmed. Do you think there's a deal cut in the background that this is a foregone conclusion, or how much are you going to see the Republicans stand up and resist this? Where are we going to see the fight?
Well, I think where you're going to see the fight is that the Republicans really feel very strongly that having a single director of the CFPB invest too much power in one person. And the fact that CFPB was insulated from congressional control over their budget is another thing that drives them crazy. So the two things together, Republicans feel, is kind of a deadly combination from their standpoint. I think they also are genuinely concerned about the ability of the CFPB to place too much emphasis on consumer regulation that could harm a bank's finances. But I think of the three, the first two I mentioned, the no control over the money and having a single director instead of a commission, is what really drives them up the wall. So I don't know if there's a compromise possible there. But, of course, this is politics. And so the instant you say that, people then turn around and cut a deal and everybody proclaims victory and moves on.
Yeah, exactly right. Everyone's going to do that. And we certainly have the being the political climate that we're in right now, and it's going to be even more so. It's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. Glenn, let's Joe, unless you've got something that you want to add to the CFPB discussion, I was going to go out and say let's go out to Glenn and get kind of a take his radar, stretch it out to the full distance, run a full scan across the landscape of mortgage banking, see what the – have him do a quick SWOT analysis for us. Joe, do you have anything else on topic you want to go
to? The only comment would be if in the face of the 300 legislators and just about every group imaginable complaining about that definition of QRM, the regulators were to keep it at that. That would sure bolster the Republicans' position on saying, hey, an individual's got just too much power.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think that's probably true, and that's not the likely outcome that they would stick with that, Joe. But like I said before, this is politics, and so you can't ever rule anything out. The regulators could decide to just dig in their heels and go with their original proposal. One thing I want to mention, though, Dave, and I'll just take 30 seconds to do this.
Yeah.
I want to mention that something near and dear, I think, to your listeners' hearts is, of course, the loan originator compensation regulation.
Yes.
That's under Truth in Lending, and all of that passes to the CFPB. So the CFPB now will be in charge of enforcing the rule, interpreting the rule, all those things associated with it.
Altering the rule.
Yep. Altering the rule, potentially, yes, exactly right. So it'll be interesting to see if they take a different approach than the Fed. And, of course, as you know, the Fed has been at least grudgingly willing to give informal opinions and interpretations, but nothing formal, nothing in writing.
Yep.
And everybody's hoping that the CFPB will be more willing to give definitive guidance to the industry, and we'll just have to wait and see if that happens.
Well, I think that is significant, is, their influence to the extent that they broaden it or bring us greater definition, because certainly the ambiguity is creating a lot of room for these lawsuits that are flying around out there. Glenn, Joe, any more on that?
Nope. Thank you very much, Glenn.
All right, good. I want to cover out, Glenn, let's do a quick SWOT analysis. For those of you who don't know what that is, an acronym for the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Glenn, you've got a lot of clients that are companies that are joined your group and the Community Mortgage Banking Project group. And what would you say that we as an industry should see as our greatest strengths? Let's start with our strengths real quick.
Well, I think the greatest strengths are this. I think it's widely acknowledged that you're not going to have the kind of economic recovery everybody's been hoping for until the mortgage market stabilizes. And even if you're not seeing increases in home prices, that at least you're not seeing continued falling in home prices. So from that standpoint, I think even the most rabid people in Washington, the anti-industry people, understand that you need a flow of mortgage credit to all qualified borrowers in order to stabilize the housing market. So that, I think, is our biggest strength, the fact that we're at the crossroads and the heart of what's pushing the economy one way or the other right now. I think
Warren Buffett said the same thing. The key to our recovery is that. And so anyway,
right.
and when he speaks, everyone listens, kind of like the old EF Hutton guys. All right, next.
True. So the second thing I was going to say is that I think that the mortgage industry has really done a much better job than they had been of representing and getting across their interests in Washington. I think certainly since the Dodd-Frank Act was passed, that the industry has regained a lot of ground that was lost through the passage of that law. And frankly, you're seeing a lot more a more realistic approach in the industry. It's not so much, my God, this is a do or die kind of thing, as,
right.
Okay, this law is there, so let's see what we need to do in order to make it workable so that we can continue to do the business of making loans to people and hopefully making a profit at it.
Okay, let's talk quickly. We got just a few minutes left. Let's run through these quickly. The weaknesses of the industry, other than production's off by ever, what else would you say one of the greatest weaknesses of our industry?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think probably actually it's a weakness that it can't be helped. You have an industry where you have three players that control 55% plus of annual loan originations, and then you have everyone else. And so as a result, you often have a lot of very tough inter-industry strife because you have three players that sometimes view their interests as very different from the rest of the industry. I'd say that's probably the greatest weakness the industry has.
I agree with you, and I think the opportunities continue to be what you said. We are going to be the engine of recovery. The threat, again, a lot of the regulation. Beyond regulation, is there a threat that you think that we should be really thinking of other than that?
Well, here's the thing. You know, your listeners may have heard about the mortgage IT case and and the parent Deutsche Bank getting sued by the U.S. attorney up in New York. So everything I hear is that that has caused a tremendous amount of heartburn among the big banks that own mortgage operations. Genuine concern about whether or not their liability may be much greater than they ever suspected if, in fact, the allegations in that lawsuit turn out to be the basis for other U.S. attorneys to go after other big bank-owned companies and their bank parents. And so independent and mid-sized companies may see a lot more opportunity in the mortgage space if you have one or more of these big banks deciding, you know what, we're going to get out of the mortgage business, period.
That may be the biggest opportunity right there. That's outstanding. Folks, we've run out of time with Glenn. Glenn, so good to have you back here with us. Again, your website where they can go learn more is www.communitymb.org. Did I get it right?
.com. Yes, you did. Great.
As in mortgage banking. MB as in mortgage banking.org.
Right. Yes.
Right? Got it right. So good to have you with us. Appreciate it. Say hi to Pete, and we look forward to having you back. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us, and Tony Garitano joins us again on the program. Tony, there's a real problem with REO out there. How do you solve it? Can technology help?
Well, Dave, I think that if we knew the answer to that 100%, we'd probably all be millionaires and billionaires. But,
yep, that's so true.
I think the issue is that there has to be, or the main solution is that there has to be a solution. We're seeing a continued amount of shadow inventory. Lenders don't want to foreclose. Short sales are difficult. The issue has to be, let's get moving on whatever resolution we want to do, but let's get it going.
And so how does technology fit into this?
Well, on the origination side, we have to remember that originators are used to keeping different parties connected, Dave. Servicers aren't necessarily used to doing that. So what you're seeing is technology vendors are increasingly coming out with e-collaboration tools from companies like DRI to Resource Technology to IndySoft and others. So what they can do is you can add these e-collaboration technology tools onto your servicing system to allow you to interact with realtors and attorneys to get those foreclosures, short sales, deeds and lieus going. And that's what we as an industry really need to get moving on.
I think there's a great example. In fact, we're going to have on in a future program. I'm going to get you introduced to a company called US ResNet out there. They have some proprietary technology they use inside that is just amazing. I've had the privilege of looking at it. A great company that's handling and managing is an REO outsourced third-party REO management firm. So, Tony, I'm going to get you in touch with them, have you review it. Any comments? What else you see out there? We got about 30 seconds before we have to go to the door here.
On the servicing end, Dave, I would say servicing systems are old and antiquated for the most part, but lenders and servicers should know that there is other technology available, and they should take advantage of it.
So good to have you with us, Tony Garitano. You can read the articles on that Tony has and offers up on Progress Lending. What is it, Lendy? I'm just blowing it. You're getting your website blown here.
Progressinlending.com.
Progressinlending.com. Tony, thank you so much for being with us. Next week, we're going to be back talking about the future of mortgage banking. We're going to have a lot of going on. We're going to specifically talk about some of the lawsuits that are happening out there. As we look at these things, it's starting to become such a big problem, we're going to go after it. Folks, we hope you have a great week. Tune in next week. Tell your friends about it. Tell your trade association about it. Get the word out. We appreciate you being a part of the program each and every week, and I appreciate you broadening our audience. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.